Now, our listener Rebecca Payton got in touch with us after hearing Alan Davis on this programme talk about losing his mother when he was six. Her father died in an accident when she also was six, an event which, of course, profoundly shaped her experience of growing up. And then in adulthood, another bereavement. Her sister, the BBC journalist Kate Payton, was murdered in Somalia reporting the civil war there. People deal with loss in different ways because we are all different. Rebecca took hers on stage. Why did you decide to go on stage with the extraordinary churn of experience that came about as a result of bereavement?
Well, it was hours, but maybe days, but I think hours. And I was just like, I want to make a show about this because I was an actor already. I often say to people, don't become an actor and make a show about bereavement at the same time. It might be too much. But I was already an actor. And it just seemed like the obvious thing for me to do. As you say, everyone's different. And I guess that's one of the things one of the reasons my collaborator and I made the show was because we really have an aversion to talking about these things in our society. I mean, for you, Richard, it's something that you'll be steeped in because it's one of the roles, one of the things you're allowed to do.
Well, it's my daily bread.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of acceptable. You're the guy who can call up. You're the guy who can turn up. That's okay. But for lots of other people, they feel incredibly difficult. They don't know what to do, what to say. And because of my experience of being a small child hearing Alan Davies talk about it was really interesting because my experience of it was that it made me extremely frightening for adults. You kind of become terrifying. Adults don't know what to do with you. And it was a long time before I realised that maybe I'm not terrifying, although I think it's potential I am actually terrifying. But I'm not terrifying. It was the fact that I'd had this terrifying experience. And so when Kate died, which was a public thing, it was all over the news, it was already in the public domain. And I was like, I'm going to own this being a public matter and make something in my own words about it.
Because in a way you'd been robbed of your own experience, partly because of the conventions that apply when somebody dies. And everyone's so kind of super nervous and anxious about it that it kind of stifles what's happening within you. And you're, of course, the person who's actually having to deal with it.
Yeah, certainly as a child, my experience was having to kind of help people through their experience of encountering me. Which I've gone on to do as an adult, and I, hope everyone will agree in this room that I've been fine so far. ish. Yeah, okay, well, we'll talk about it later. But as a kid, what I learnt was I had to help, particularly adults, kids are slightly more direct because they don't really know what it is they should be afraid of. And it's a lot of experience. And I mean, I'm not into the idea that kids and children are different. People, and adults and children are so different. People say, oh, but kids are really resilient. No, they do it differently. An adult will, go out for 17 gins, not speak for a week or whatever it is. We see a child go and play and then walk over and say, but where is Granny? And we think they're fine because they're asking it and they're dealing with it in that way. So I think I, as a kid, learned I had to help people with what a strange little thing I was because they looked into my eyes and saw things they didn't want to see.
Yeah. You also, of course, have an ear and an eye for the comedy of those situations.
Yes.
Of course, people get terribly solemn, don't they, around death? And, of course, that, again, provides a rich environment for comedy to happen because there are, comedy and tragedy are handmaidens.
Yeah, they are the same thing. They're the top of the clock.
Yeah.
And hysteria, is the same, is one thing. And it can be horrendous or ridiculous or simultaneously both, which is my experience of a great deal of it. And it's so off the experience of there's so many traumatic experiences are sort of off the scale. But the experience of sudden loss is absurd. In itself, it's absurd. You can't understand it. You don't know what's going on. Your brain can't accept it. Your body can't accept it. And consequently, everything kicks off, I think.
Did you find that people were slow to laugh or reluctant to laugh or needed a bit of encouragement to laugh when you started talking about the sort of comedy that followed your sister's death?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people are very scared because they don't want to do the wrong thing. I mean, particularly the British, I think, we're really keen. And consequently, quite often, we do nothing at all, which for
pretend
me is...
Pretend nothing has happened.
Yeah, we think if we don't mention it, don't go anywhere near it, then we can quickly get out of the situation. And what we're doing then is protecting ourselves. I understand that desire. I don't want to do the wrong thing. I don't want to say the wrong thing. But when I remember a friend, an erstwhile friend, in fact, of mine, said to me one evening, I'd been persuaded to go to a party when I really didn't want to go to a party. I said, I'll turn up and sit in the corner and cry. It's a birthday party. I don't see that as celebratory unless it's after a serious amount of, tequila.
Cake. Yeah.
Or cake. Sorry, yeah, cake. You're quite right, slip of the tongue. And she said, she asked me how I was. A wonderful, wonderful question. And I'm prone to be honest. And I said, well, you know, and started talking and started weeping. I was talking about what I'd been doing, but I was weeping. And she said, oh, I didn't mean to upset you. And I said, no, no, you haven't upset me. The guy with the gun who shot my sisters upset me, which made me laugh. And my poor friend was just standing there. But what she meant was, please don't display your emotion in front of me. I'm English. It's
You're making
terrible.
Me feel bad.
Yeah, exactly. I don't stop making me feel bad. Mm. And I understand the desire. You don't want to feel bad. You don't want to stand with someone and go, I can't help you.
But before your own experience, can you remember how you used to be with people who perhaps had suffered bereavement? Because it is a bit of a minefield, isn't it? Because everyone reacts differently. Some people want to talk about it and some people really don't.
You see, I often say I'm tremendously lucky because it happened to me so early. Mm. I don't really remember what life is without bereavement and without loss. I will often, you know, say to people, you know, my father's death taught me how to deal with the death of hamsters.
Well, no.
You know, and it really did.
And I do, I mean, I genuinely think for most children, if they're lucky, the first real grief they will feel is the death of an animal.
Mm. Absolutely.
It's one and of that, what an amazing piece of luck that is, actually, if it's not your parent or your sibling or somebody really
totally.
That is that close to your heart. But quite often you learn about love and you learn about grief through pets.
Absolutely. And, I think that's a key thing when it comes to animals, yeah.
Were you helped at all by people who have expertise in these sort of matters, giving you ideas, telling you, helping you, informing you, insisting that you grieve in certain ways?
Nah, it was 1978 in Suffolk, mate.
Ian,
I had no idea. It's, there was nothing like that. I think possibly then there wasn't really the idea that children had a psychology of any kind. And there was this idea that children are resilient. despite it being so far post-Freud, I think people really didn't associate properly some of the things we do as adults with some of the trauma we experience as kids.
Did you feel it marked you off from other children having had that experience?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, I suppose most people, I don't know, my idea is most people feel weird. I certainly felt very, very odd. And I still feel odd, you know. I mean, at dinner parties, I'm inclined to go, that's interesting. So they've been diagnosed. It's terminal, is it? Tell me about that. And you can see it. Some people are delighted. And they dive straight in. Yeah. And then some people don't want to talk about it. And then I will merrily talk about me because I'm fascinating. But my thing is...
Love that.
Exactly. But I'm like, I let there be an occasion for the terribly difficult things to be discussed. And if you don't want to talk about your terrible thing, man alive, I will talk about my great thing. That's fine by me. But what we don't have culturally is a place where people are allowed and they're not allowed to react naturally. They're not allowed to laugh. They're not allowed to make a terrible death joke because everyone just goes, I think he just made a death joke.
But we're not even really allowed to cry in public.
No.
I mean, my mother told me when her father died and she was in her teens that my terrifying grandmother said to her going into church for the funeral, now don't cry.
Absolutely.
And pinched her as well as she started,
totally.
The bottom lip started to wobble at her own father's funeral.
Yeah, and it sets up this crazy dissonance, especially for children, where they, there's the concept of gaslighting, which is where it's from, based on a play, 20th century play, where a husband is gradually turning down the gaslight in the house and his wife is saying, isn't it dark, darling? And he's saying, no, it's not. And she ends up losing her mind because of the dissonance between what her experience is and what she's being told is reality. And that happens to kids a lot. If adults around them present that they're fine the whole time, the kid's thinking, but I feel like death.
Yeah.
But all the adults, and on the adults go and cry in another room. And indeed, then if you're not allowed to cry, you know.
Isn't that one of the reasons why comedy is good too? Because comedy has a similar effect in kind of earthing unruly emotions. Instead of keeping it in, a laugh can sometimes get that out.
Oh, yeah, you can. All sorts of things happen to you physically and emotionally. But also, I think you can say the thing. I mean, there are so many different ways of saying things. You know, you can use passive aggression. That's one of my favourite methods.
That's the Anglican way.
Absolutely. It's the original route. But, you know, you can say things in comedy, which is what's so interesting. You know, I'm watching so much stuff with the American election at the moment. I was watching Louis C.K. talking about his opinions on the whole situation that's kicking off in the US. It's grim, dark stuff. And he's very, very funny. And consequently, I can listen to some opinions, you know, that I may or may not agree with, but I can really hear it because it's given to me with humour, and the humour is kind of, this is the kindness around difficult matters.
And a sort of licence also to talk about them and not to just go... Meh.
Absolutely. I mean, I think people have been really... I mean, I've done the show 110 times now, and so I kind of know it works. But people are terrified of it. They're terrified of me when I say my sister's been murdered, And I often will put my hand on someone's arm and say, yes, I made a show about my real sister's real murder, because I need to introduce these, all these ideas, and people look stunned and shocked. If they meet me, they often will come to the show because I'm not as terrifying as the idea seems.
What's but it's the, a really what's the show called?
It's called Sometimes I Laugh Like My Sister.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Rebecca. Rebecca's with us until the end of the programme. Do please get in touch with your questions and comments in the usual way.
Before the news, we were talking to you, Rebecca, about, well, I suppose the very varied responses that people have to talking to someone who has suffered a bereavement. And I wondered, David, you obviously grew up in a different country, yes. different environment. Until the age of 13, you lived in Hong Kong. Do you relate to what Rebecca's saying, or do people deal with things differently?
No, we Chinese in China and Hong Kong are very sensitive, and we never joke. We never say anything. We don't even ask the person who is in bereavement, I hope everything's all right. There's a stone silence when there's a death in a family. And then there would be a ritual of people coming to bow. They don't say anything either. They bow in front of the portrait of the diseased, and then they sit down, and nobody says anything, and then there's a sort of ceremony at the end, and there is never a wake. So when I came to England, when I learned later that people talked a lot more, that people had wakes and people joked about people's death, I was quite interested in the difference of approaches of these two people. And I think on the whole, the Western approach is probably better because it's more open, we Chinese keep it to ourselves. We think death is a very solemn thing, and we don't need to share it.
Rebecca, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating how different cultures deal with it, I think. And how, because, you know, there's the all sorts of religious traditions are interesting because of what they allow. I think one of the things that's culturally happened in this country is if you've got a religious tradition that you follow, that can really help you through. And it sounds like, you know, the Chinese way you're talking, there's a particular cultural tradition. I somehow think, when I speak very much about the English now, being very English, the English are quite lost because we become more secular, but we don't have traditions that replace it.
Is there a particular culture or nationality or religion that you kind of look towards when it comes to bereavement and you think, actually, they've got it, they know how to do it. I wish that we were more like them.
Well, I don't know. There's something... I'm very much on a journey of learning about other places and other people. You know, we've had the show translated into Spanish because I speak Spanish, so we intend to go to America and do it in both languages. When I say we, I mean Martin, my collaborator, and I do the show. He sits in the dark telling me, yeah, carry on. And so it's interesting going to other places. I've been in South Africa where we anticipated different reactions. The reactions were really similar because there is surrounding it. There is some kind of shame. Death is seen as a failure, essentially, which I find most peculiar. I mean, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool atheist, but there's no battle with cancer. What? I can't, that kind of language, and death is always a failure. And I think there's a fear of fundamental failure. Pass away, passing on, gone before. What are you talking about? Left us, what, gone to the next room? Yes. Which next room? A metaphorical next room. Right. The metaphors drive me, it drives me nuts. They've died. It's okay. It's terrible, but it's okay.
One of the reasons sometimes why people are reserved about it is actually because often people go a bit bananas after somebody dies, because life goes crazy for people.
Totally.
And sometimes there's a sort of restraint around those around them, simply to let them have that kind of moment.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's also a shame about that craziness. I mean, we really, the word itself, you know, we struggle with the idea of mental disturbance. And we talk these days quite a lot about mental illness, which is, yes, that's changing. But it's a continuum. Some days you feel slightly more on top of your horse than you do other days. And there's nothing wrong with either of those days. And I think we struggle. I mean, it's very, I think a lot of my friends found me very difficult. They're no longer friends after my sister died. Because it changes you. And you are temporarily or permanently what would be referred to as insane. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a perfectly sensible reaction to an incomprehensible thing. I love the Jewish tradition where people come to your house. And everyone comes and people keep coming. And I have this sense, having had it described to me by a good friend of mine, who's a trauma counsellor, also Jewish. I like the idea that this just kind of goes on until you're sort of sick of it and you want everyone to get the, you know, damn out of your house so that you can get on with your life. And there's an element there of you taking back some control. But everyone recognises it. Mm. The world stops, as it does for the bereaved people.
Yeah, I think in my experience, two things follow bereavement, food and romance very often. And I think both of those are attempts to kind of make up an experience deficiency a lot.
Yeah, I love the way you use the word romance, but
well, yes. Yes, you know what I mean.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Very things that you very much need. Yeah, no, totally.
Very good. Now, Alexandra.